Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things ORP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of ORP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danu, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for this second season of Circles of Connection. This episode and the next one are focused on teachers' voices in primary and secondary school. They talk about their training, the shift in mindset and culture that RP foster, their practice, modeling or explicitly teaching RP, the challenges they meet and what they learn from them. The contexts in primary and secondary level are quite different. So in this episode, you will hear again Brian and Becky from St. Hilton's Primary School in Dublin. And in the following one, you'll hear teachers from Castleknock College in Dublin. First, Brian talked about an important shift he experienced when he arrived in the school he's teaching now, from focusing to the tools RP offer, like the questions, to focusing on the relationship.
I said the same thing to a child walking down the corridor and they didn't stop. And another person said the exact same thing and the child did stop. So like what I thought was the questions or the magic words, it was actually that relationship that made that child see Aoife and go, I actually feel calmer just even by being with you because I know how this conversation is going and because he had a relationship with her. Whereas I didn't have a relationship with that child. So why would he stop? I think we all started like the questions in my wallet and it was, right, there's an argument here, great question time. Do you know, rather than, I know this child has escalated. I know something about them. Maybe I've taught their sister. Maybe I know their family. Maybe I know something about them more than just this person's in trouble, you know? So I think we probably kind of got the questions and thought, these are our school's questions. This is what we do. Rather than this child will talk to me because they know that it's going to be a conversation. You know, I think most children in my class, it's if you ask them, which is great, it's like, what happens if there's an argument and you say, oh, we talk about it, you know? So that's, they've never mentioned really the questions. You ask these six questions or they're on the wall, that wouldn't really come into it anymore. Whereas at the start it was, you're in a fight, let's go do the questions. So I think, yeah, that focus was there originally. I think it's much more focused on building relationships and maintaining relationships now, so that when the conflict does happen, it's de-escalated even just by the way that people are around the school, or the fact that if some child, even their friend was in a fight or in a conflict, that is it, no, he's all right, or she's all right, you can go and talk to them. You know, so that's probably bigger than anything now. Whereas at the start, it was definitely, yeah, question heavy, or there's a fight, right, get the wallet out, where's the questions?
Becky tells us how, from a youth worker role, she settled in their teaching role in St. Hilton's, and she describes her own practice as a nurture teacher. To know more about her role, you can listen to our previous episode on St. Hilton's.
Even though I trained as a teacher for many years, before I came to St. Alden's, I was working in for a charity in inner city Dublin, which is actually where I first came across restorative practice. So it was a more of a youth work setting, but I was going into schools, running programs. So still based in a lot of primary schools, but a little bit of a different role. But I'd say that it was, you know, communication and emotional literacy and things like that were part of who I was as a teacher and my values as a teacher. But then going into more of a community-based setting allowed you this kind of maybe relaxed approach with children and young people where you really are trying to get them to buy in and work with. Which obviously is very restorative in its nature. But then I found when I came back to teaching and started in St. Alton's, it was such a paradigm shift for me because although I had been kind of explicitly trained in restorative practice, I hadn't had that in a classroom setting before. So I actually found that year was a huge learning curve for me. When you're, you know, have the expectations of a teacher and getting through the curriculum, and you have 20 something or 30 something students in front of you, and then you're navigating, but how do I bring that sense of doing with as opposed to doing things for or to the children? So yeah, that was a huge learning curve with lots of reflective practice and lots of actually going to Brian, my colleague, at the end of the day and saying, I don't think that went so good. How do I do this differently? So I remember like starting that year, my first day here and facing, you know, this kind of vibrant and enthusiastic and also quite energetic fifth class, and starting with a circle and wanting to kind of come up with agreements, and the principal popping in to see how we were getting on, and me thinking like, oh, I really hope this is okay. Like I was on the floor with a flip chart out and the kids all sitting around in a circle, and the look on her face made me know that I had landed in the right place because she was like so on board and excited. But yeah, definitely that settling into bringing restorative practice into my teaching role was quite an adjustment, and mostly probably to do with my expectations of myself and how I viewed the teacher-student relationship. And I probably drew a lot on my time more as a community worker in that space, what I learned about building relationships, even more so than maybe my teacher training initially. So yes, that's some of where, you know, settling into this school, I think I, you know, where in my time working for the charity, I did a lot of facilitating restorative conversations. I didn't have as much opportunity to like to use restorative language in the everyday or do circles or things like that. So a classroom setting actually grew me a lot in maybe those pieces. I'm hoping that it's different in teacher training colleges now. But I think when I was trained, I heard a lot about discipline and a lot about not showing too much of who you are and being strict. And actually, I think what I've learned through restorative practice is quite the opposite of that. It's been willing in moments to be vulnerable and say sorry as a teacher and say I got something wrong, or I actually wish I hadn't responded that way, or things like that. And you know, children being able to see you have fun, being able to hear that you know, your interests or your favorite chocolate bar or all those kind of more natural things that weren't part of the picture I had in my head of what it would be. At the moment, I'm in the role of nurture teacher. So it allows me a lot of time to do check-ins with children. So I take children out in small groups. And they would have a time in the nurture room, you know, every day that is a quieter, calmer time where the primary focus is relationship building and giving them a space to express who they are and, you know, if they have any needs or feelings coming up for them, a space to express that. So I think like a huge amount of that marries so well with restorative practice, things like check-ins and games and hearing, you know, those questions that unlock so much about who someone is and what they enjoy. So that's a big part. Then I also go into classrooms, and we run a program in our school called Zones of Regulation, and we teach that kind of whole school, and it really looks at emotional literacy and regulation and helping children to learn to notice in their body how they're feeling and what they need. But with all of that, I get to really bring in check-ins and check-outs and talking about our triggers or facial expressions, or all those things that really feed into understanding people better and active listening as well. So that's a lot of what I do on a day-to-day basis. And then some of what is going well and not going so well. I think when it comes to what's going well or not going well, the biggest things are probably around my own mindset. So I think something that I've really integrated into my practice is this idea that I came across. I heard a psychologist say it, that in psychology, they used to look more at behavior modification, and now they've moved to focus on environment modification. So when someone is struggling with something, how can we modify the environment to help them with that rather than try and change their behavior? And I think that has been a mindset that I've brought in or try to bring in more and more to my own practice, viewing us, the adults, as a huge part of the environment. So we might not be able to change behaviors, but what is it we can change about the environment or about ourselves or about how we're approaching a child or a student or another person that would change the interaction? So I think that's a mindset for me that I kind of return to again and again. And what's not working so well is when I become critical, or if I become critical in my thinking, like or perfectionistic, like trying to do something the right way as opposed to doing it the human way, and or trying to do things alone and not reaching out for help. So I think there's some of the things that in my own practice, just looking personally at me as opposed to at the school, that I see can either be going well or not so well.
Most practitioners working with young people believe that modeling RP for them can be enough to equip students with the skills that will help them build and maintain healthy relationships. By being as much as possible a restorative teacher, by teaching restoratively, the hope is that it will have a positive impact. And as Brian said in a previous episode, it will filter down. However, to support that, despite competing agenda and institutional constraints, some organizations or practitioners are also running programs to explicitly teach RP to young people. Brian gave the examples of what was done in St. Hilton's, first with the RP Buddy system, where young people were trained in RP to solve conflicts on the playground, and then with the RP lessons they have designed to be delivered each year in September to each class.
Amory and Eva at the time, they developed their own kind of program to train the children. So it was kind of like a two-day course. It was almost like a 9 to 12 over 2 weeks, where we came together, we looked at the questions, we kind of worked on what are they, when do we use them, how do we use them. We put them in kind of problem-solving situations. We used some problem-solving circles as well. So a child would come with an issue they were having, and everyone would suggest a different solution. And even highlighting that, like one scenario was a child, his sister kept taking his mobile phone, and everyone in the circle suggested a different way to solve that problem for him at home. And the three solutions that he used were completely different to the three that I would have used, or that the other children would have used. And they even had a conversation around, I never would have picked that. I never would have done that. So even highlighting that not every problem has to be solved the same way or different, it was a really good way of highlighting different perspectives on how one person would see a solution to a problem compared to another person. So they kind of came out of that with, I suppose, a better understanding of what the resolution of an issue would look like on the playground, that their own kind of perspective on it wasn't the important thing. It was the people who were in the conflict. And then in the classroom, I suppose we're starting to explicitly talk to children about what it is. You know, it's not just the questions. It's building relationships. It's our values. So developing those lessons and explicitly teaching it is, you know, it's not perfect. Like, we have to go back and kind of redo some of the lessons for the younger years. I know, say, first and second class, found them, they weren't like child friendly for that particular age group. There was some heavier stuff, or the way it was worded maybe wasn't appropriate for them. but at least we're starting a conversation, or it's explicitly every year in September we teach these lessons or we have these conversations.
Coming and going from modeling to explicit teaching, Becky talks about what helps her reflect on our practice and how much RP has been a journey for her.
I would say reflecting isn't maybe one of my difficulties. It's I can reflect a lot. It's actually just not getting stuck reflecting on your own. And what's really helpful for me is letting other people in. And particularly, you know, in my setting, I can be working with children who maybe at this time in their lives have a lot going on emotionally, or really struggle to express what's going on emotionally. And so I can get caught in reflecting again and again, what went wrong? Why were they triggered today? What was, you know, and actually there comes a point that can be unhelpful if you're doing it on your own. So I think for me, especially around some of those particular situations in school, there are people that, because I work closely with them or work closely, we all work closely maybe with the same child or in the similar situation, it would be like regularly built in that we would have kind of reflective conversations around that. And then like zoomed out from there, I've reached out to other nurture teachers because I think it can be, you know, quite an isolated role when you're maybe the only person in that role in your school. I think in my setting, that's maybe a little bit different because we have so many people, say, in the care service, or so many people who just bring nurture as an approach, that there is a lot of opportunity to reflect. But so I do have some nurture teachers specifically that we would kind of do peer learning in order to have a space to reflect. And then I find it so, so helpful, any opportunity that we are training in school or that I'm training in other schools, to reflect and to learn from others and also to listen. And I think for me, the richest learning and growing in restorative practice has been in that environment of cross-pollination and people who are in different settings and different environments, and maybe is an SNA, not just a teacher, or is in a prison, or is in youth work. Like, they've been the times that probably my greatest aha moments have come from. So I just wanted to share, in the spirit of being restorative, that I've been quite anxious on the run-up to this podcast, and I was trying to understand what that was about. And I think for me, it's been because so much of my restorative journey has been so meandering and changed so much year to year. And so sometimes I look back on how I used to do things or say things or how I would frame things. And now I maybe cringe a little, or I think, oh, I'd say that differently now. So the idea of having it captured, a moment in time when it really is just a journey. I was a little bit afraid of doing that. But I think part of it for me is accepting that it is a journey. And I probably will listen to this in however long, a week, a month, a year, and think, oh, I would answer that completely differently now, and that's okay too.
Finally, they talk powerfully about their learning.
I heard a great phrase that one of the other teachers said, and it was using your voice as a behavior management tool, which basically was a nice way of saying shouting. From the time that I've spent here just building those relationships and just meeting children where they're at. And I think them building up a reputation for yourself that you are someone who a child will see walking down the corridor in the thick of it or in a heightened state, and they see you and go, that person, I have a relationship with that person. I know that they're going to look after me, or I know that we're going to have a conversation. I think that's been that magic moment when someone said the same words that I did, but the child stopped for them. That relationship piece, and actually just children seeing you as someone who is going to listen to them, and that has, I suppose, spent the time giving them a high five when they're going down the corridor, or saying hello to them, or knowing their name, that they see you in that heightened moment and go, okay, I can calm down now, I can de-escalate. I think that, for me, putting the time into those relationships has kind of, that's been the biggest thing, really, you know. So there's less shouting, a lot less shouting. There's more conversations, and there's those moments now. I can go into them kind of with confidence and with the skill to know, like, look, I've spent time building up a relationship with this person. So I know that they'll see me in a positive way, you know, even if they are in the height of it.
My biggest piece of learning is that relationships are the important work in school. You know, we think we're doing so much important work, all these subjects and lifelong things, but really it comes down to relationships are the important work.
Thank you very much for these words of wisdom. Stay tuned for our next episode with teachers in Castleknock College.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.